Have you ever written a letter to the editor or an op-ed column for a newspaper? Have you ever called a radio program or possibly been asked to be a political commentator on television or interviewed for any issue for a media news report? If so, the odds are you're a man. We'll explore why that is, talk about why it matters, and discuss efforts by our guests to change that. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 31st. Our conversation is prompted by a recent column in the Christian Science Monitor written by the president of the Women's Media Center saying women's voices are too often missing in op-ed land and that it's up to women and to editors to create a better gender balance. We'll welcome your questions and your answers, maybe. I'm especially interested in hearing from women who are also way underrepresented when it comes to calls to this program or most radio talk shows for that matter. Why do you call in to a call-in show or why don't you? Do you write newspaper op-eds or don't you? Why or why not? Do you notice the gender imbalance in the media? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Glenda Testone. She is Vice President of the Women's Media Center. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Well, thanks a lot for being here. To what extent is this imbalance, this gender imbalance, how big of a problem is this?
Well, it's pretty severe. Women are not adequately represented in the media. A study coming out of the Annenberg Public Policy Institute says that women actually hold 3% of clout positions in the media. These are the clout positions that make the ultimate decisions about what goes on air. They own the media instruments themselves. The people who really have the control, and only 3% of those people are women. Women are over half the population. Women are the number one consumers in this country, and they just are simply missing from so many aspects of media, which is a huge problem. Media is the number one public education vehicle we have in this country. It's how we get all of our information, aside from sitting across the kitchen table and talking to someone. And we really need to make sure that that information we're getting is complete, it's diverse, and it's reflective of the America that we actually live in.
Yeah, and it's not just women in control in these media companies, it's the number of women we see, for example, on op-ed pages in the newspaper.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, less than 15% of op-eds across the board are written by women. There was a study done very recently that looked at academics that are writing on the op-ed pages, and almost all of them are submitted by men. 97% of the academic op-eds in the Wall Street Journal are submitted by men. 82% in the New York Times submitted by men. So women are really, their voices are getting shut out of these outlets. And this is really, you know, the op-ed pages are the place where public debate happens, where ideas are examined and examined a little more thoroughly than some other places in the newspaper nowadays. And it's just so important that we hear from women and we get to benefit from the expertise they have to bring to the table.
Yeah, so who's responsible for this?
Well, I think we all have a role to play. You know, we really need a better system. We need a system to encourage, train, and support women. And that's actually what we do at the Women's Media Center. We identify women who are experts in their field, and we bring them in and train them on how to write op-eds, how to be guests on television news shows, how to call into a radio show, how to write a letter to the editor. We all need to be interacting with our media more. And I think that women really need and deserve the encouragement to actually go and do that. Sometimes men are much more ready to kind of jump in and give their opinion, and women need to know that their opinions matter as well, and they should be sharing those.
Well, that's the example that I gave a little bit earlier at the top of the hour. When I talk to women about this program and whether or not they call in or not, often I will hear, I don't call in because I'm not really an expert on the topic.
Right, so right. And I know you're actually later on in the program going to have someone who is an expert in this exact issue. She trains women all over the country as part of the Op-Ed Project, and she hears this all the time. At the Women's Media Center, we hear it in our trainings, too. We bring women in, and they are so impressed with each other. They sit around the table, and they say, wow, this is an amazing table of women. These women should be in the media. And sometimes they exclude themselves. Yeah. And we say, no, you should be in the media as well. You have amazing things to say. I mean, we have security experts on our roster. We have economists. We have educators. We have healthcare experts, you know, bloggers. I mean, just an amazing array of people that are on our roster of spokespeople. And it does take a little push to get them to realize that they are experts. They have something valuable to contribute, and their voices should be reflected in the media. And I think part of it is they're just not used to seeing that. We are not used to seeing an abundance of women's faces and voices in the media, and that has got to change.
Yeah. I was watching the cable news networks just in the past week thinking about this because I knew we were going to be doing this program, and I don't know if it's just my imagination, but I think I'm seeing more women political commentators than I used to.
Well, it's interesting. An organization based in D.C., Media Matters, just did a study, and they did a study on kind of the diversity, both gender and ethnic diversity, of guests in the media, both before, during, and after the IMUS controversy. This is when IMUS on MSNBC went on the air and said horribly racist and sexist things about the Rutgers women's basketball team. And what they found is that before the controversy, there were not a lot of women, probably less than 25%, or in some cases much worse than that. During the IMUS controversy, there was an uptick. There actually were slightly more women's guests and slightly more ethnic diversity on the cable news shows. And then really, as soon as the IMUS controversy was over, a lot of the networks returned to those previous abysmal numbers, and some of them even got worse.
Oh, really?
So I think because we're at a point where we just had Hillary Clinton running for president, we have Barack Obama running for president right now, we are seeing a little more diversity in the media, but what we've learned is that doesn't necessarily last unless we push for it. And that's really what we try to do at the Women's Media Center is, you know, we had a campaign called Sexism Sells, but we're not buying it, talking about the sexism in the media. And we had thousands of people sign a petition saying, you know, the media is not representative of women, it's not representative of me, and we need to do something about it. And we're actually going to be taking those signatures to the networks to talk to them about how they really can embody the American public and really have that diversity that we all love in this country and make sure that it's represented on those networks.
How much of this is because fewer women are in the fields of, say, political science or other fields that might be tapped for political commentary or op-ed writing?
Well, I've really seen, I mean, we have hundreds of women apply to be part of our Progressive Women's Voices program, and we select 10 women for each class, and I can tell you, as someone who personally looks through those applications and trains these women, there are more than enough women to be able to talk about this. SheSource actually has a database of 500 women that can talk about a variety of topics. We have three or four women I can name right off the top of my head that are experts in this area. They are trained. They are ready to go. And, you know, we are pushing very hard with a lot of success recently. We've recently placed women in the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN. You know, we're really getting women out there on the radio, but it takes that constant pushing, and it really takes the support of organizations that are doing this to make sure that we can consistently see those women out there.
Yeah. Does anyone really notice this besides maybe a group like yours?
You know, it's funny. I think that people do. I'm amazed when I talk to my friends and when I talk to my male friends and I say something about this and they say, oh, yeah, I know. I saw how Hillary was treated by the media. Or, you know, we heard this a lot in the primary season. Or they'll say, yeah, you know, I was watching those Sunday shows and I never see women. Or, gosh, come to think of it, when I read the New York Times op-ed page, there is rarely a woman. So I think that it's not something that's top of mind for people, but that's the work that we have to do. We really have to educate them about how the information, you know, I love the media. I think it's a great tool that we have in this country. And at its best, it's a tool that can be used to educate, to inform, and to empower people. And in order to do that, we need to make sure that the media is reflective of the country, that the media is representative of the amazing talent and diversity that we have in this country. And the truth is, it's not right now. It really is missing women's voices. It's missing people of color's voices. And we really need to improve that. And I think when people realize that the information they're getting is not necessarily the full picture, they're not seeing people that look like them, that are reporting things in a way that resonate for them, it is something that people get upset about. We see that all the time.
We are talking with Glenda Testone. She is vice president of the Women's Media Center. Talking about why there are fewer women, not enough women, on the op-ed pages of our newspapers or in the ranks of broadcast media pundits. And we wonder what you think. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you notice this? Do you think it makes a difference? Are you a woman who has never called a radio program before? Will you call now? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're tuned to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6. Ben talking about a current issue of the day after 4, and he hosts his July Open Line on this last day of July after 5 o'clock. We are talking about why we don't see as many women as men on the op-ed pages of the newspaper or on television or radio, for that matter. We don't hear or see more women as commentators. Why is this happening and what can be done about it? We're talking with a guest who says we can do something about this. And we are joined also by someone who helps women share their voice. Catherine Orenstein is our next guest. She is founder and director of the Op-Ed Project, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Morning. Glad to be here.
Yeah, what is the Op-Ed Project?
The Op-Ed Project is an initiative to expand public debate with an immediate focus on women and on enlarging the pool of women who are accessing and also accessible to the opinion forums, major opinion forums in the nation, and also to the editors who need them.
Yeah, so what do you do?
We target and train women experts all across the nation in all fields, women engineers, women scientists, women businesswomen, women in liberal arts, human rights, women who work on all kinds of issues, and we target and train them to write for the op-ed pages of major newspapers and also online sites and other key forms of public discourse. So we give seminars with universities and think tanks and nonprofits and community leaders, and we also add participants to a database of women experts who go into a feeder system for op-ed, radio, television, and other media.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, we take a supply side approach.
Yeah. Why do you think this is so important?
Well, it's important for a number of reasons. Op-ed pages are enormously powerful. And when I say op-ed pages, what I really mean is the key opinion forums. It's where thought leadership begins. It's a feeder of all other media. It's where ideas and people and leaders kind of rise to the top. And the people who write for these media and the people who are visible in these media are the people who set the agenda on important issues. So first of all, it's the lack of women in this media. It conveys the wrong idea that women are not leaders. And second of all, it changes the media we get, the stories that we get, and whoever writes the stories ends up writing history. So that's important. But most of all, it's important because all of us, the public, and our leaders and the people who are making decisions, we're not getting the best information. We're missing half of the best minds of the nation. You know, if you want the best ideas and the best thinking and the best solutions, you should be fishing in the whole pool, not just half the pool, for your ideas and for your thinkers.
Why do you think there are fewer women op-ed writers or political commentators on broadcast media?
You know, I think that there are patterns that go back for a long time. And, you know, there's a lot of debate about why this is. And our project actually started in 2005 after there was a speech that Larry Summers, the president of Harvard, gave about why there were so few women in math and science. And there was the suggestion that perhaps there was, a less biological aptitude for that. And that speech sparked a debate about why there are so few women in other fields, including a big debate about why there are so few women on the op-ed pages. And it took place on all the nation's newspapers just a couple of years ago, and the debate went largely like this. Susan Estrich, who is a columnist at the Los Angeles Times, accused that newspaper of sexism. And then Maureen Dowd at the New York Times said, no, that's not why. It's because women are less aggressive and they are afraid to argue. And the Washington Post, the columnist there, Anne Applebaum, actually took offense at being labeled a woman journalist. And I watched that debate, and I thought, well, all of those reasons may have something to do with it. But really, how would we know? Because there's actually another reason, and it's that women don't submit with anywhere near the frequency that men mm-hmm. do. They don't submit op-eds. They don't knock on the door. And I had actually been writing op-eds for many different regional, local, national newspapers, and my editor had always told me this. This year at the Washington Post, the ombudsman wrote that 9 out of 10 submissions to the op-ed page come from men. 9 out of 10, which means that editors have a much smaller pool of women to choose from. And so we thought, well, gee, the obvious solution is to get a lot more women, smart women, submitting op-eds. And it's been highly effective. Why do fewer women submit op-eds? I think there are a lot of reasons, but one reason, our hypothesis, and we're actually learning a lot about how true it is that there are patterns that have been set in motion for a really long time, because people tend to refer people who look like them, and they tend to call people who look like them and have the same experience and background, and maybe they know them personally. And it ends up that public debate is overwhelmingly dominated by a very narrow pool of mostly white, mostly privileged, older men. And they tend to refer people who look like them and call upon people who look like them. And I don't think there's necessarily anything insidious in that, because we all do things like that. But the question is, how do you bust that open, and how do you change those patterns? Mm-hmm. And we think the way you change those patterns is simply by doing it, getting a lot more women submitting op-eds, knocking on the door, participating in media, and referring and supporting other women to do so.
What if women wanted to get a hold of you to find out how to write some op-eds?
Absolutely. Our website is www.theopedproject.org, and we list a lot of resources on our website, as well as contact information, upcoming seminars that are open to the public, women only. We work with a ton of organizations. We post tips on our website. We have submission information for different media outlets. We post, op-eds that have been published by people who come through the session, and also pieces, arguments that have actually really changed the world. Because we focus on that as well. We don't just want people submitting pieces or participating in public debate. We want women participating in a way that makes a difference and has an impact.
Yeah, and so far you're having some success, you believe?
We've had actually great success. This project actually is started almost as an accident. It wasn't my intention to begin an organization. I thought we could just do a few seminars. I myself had benefited from an op-ed project in the 1990s. There was a small project, which still exists, a great project called the Progressive Media Project. Fantastic project, and they had contacted me and taught me how to, basics of op-ed writing and ran my pieces on what was then the Knight Ridder Wire. So I had an idea that this was a form that you could teach people, and that it wasn't something that you needed years and years to learn, but that there were basic sound concepts and certain questions and pieces of information that you could teach people. What do you need to answer for an editor to be able to take you seriously, and how long should a piece be, and what's a news hook, and how do you address a counter argument? What's the difference between being right and being effective? What is an evidence-based argument as opposed to just rhetoric? So we had a sense of what could be done, and that it wasn't necessarily an enormous investment for a very high return on investment. And our initial pilot, we did an initial pilot session with 12 women who had, none of whom had published op-eds, and out of that session, 12 op-eds came out of it in regional, local, and national places. And we've seen a very high publication rate, varies depending on what you're, mm-hmm. you are considering your success rate, whether it's national, whether it's all papers and outlets, or whether you include online and blogging. But we have tons and tons. Every single session we do, we have people publishing in all kinds of venues, including top national outlets. So it's a very teachable form.
Well, good luck, and thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Catherine Orenstein is founder and director of the Op-Ed Project. Also staying with us is Glenda Testone, Vice President of the Women's Media Center. And before we go to the phones, Glenda, we have a number of people who do want to chime in on this one.
Terrific.
What difference will it make if more women are on the newspaper op-ed pages and on television and radio?
I think it'll make a difference in two ways. The first is for consumers, for the audience. I think that, we've certainly seen it proven that when you have guests or when you have information that is reflective of a number of points of view and a number of people, that it really attracts a broader audience, and it delivers that audience more diverse information that comes from different perspectives and different people. And the second way that this will really help is, the media is struggling, especially traditional media or legacy media. It really is struggling economically. There are tons of layoffs, consolidations. It's just a tough place out there for traditional media. And I think one of the things that's missing for the struggling media is women. When you look at the success of some media that is really, it really holds women up and focuses on women and pushes them out there, it has been able to succeed in the marketplace. And so I think we need to look from an economic standpoint as well as from the standpoint of the information that's actually reaching the public and making sure that information is accurate, that it's reflective of the viewpoints that are out there and the experts that can actually share that information. It's just a win-win. There's no reason why we should not have more women out there in the media. And that's why we're working so hard at the Women's Media Center to make sure that this happens.
To the phones we go. June in Milwaukee joins us first. Hi, June. You're on the air.
Thanks. I do write letters occasionally, although not as much anymore. I do call into radio talk shows, although my challenge is I usually only can listen in the car, so I don't always get the beginning and end.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy that there are, concerted efforts to have women empowered. But I think what will happen as women become more empowered, men will run away. Because I work in the church, and so now the talk is the feminization of the church. And I heard it in another area, too, and I thought, as soon as women begin to step up to the plate, take power, begin to speak and claim their own voice, men stop listening and stop participating.
Interesting. Do you think that's true, Glenda?
You know, I think that the answer to that is not more women. I think it's less. I think we just need to create systems, and we need to create a country where listening to women and really allowing women to speak and hearing them is just as common and acceptable as it is for men. I think the only way we're going to really combat that is to make sure that there's equity, to make sure that we hear from women as often as we hear from men. So I think the answer is more, not less.
Yeah, thank you very much, June. I'm glad you called in. And do you have particular topics that you call in for when you call into the radio?
Well, like this one.
So gender issues or...
It depends on what time of the day and what show I'm listening to and so on. But I, you know, to go back to my earlier point, I agree that there has to be equity, but I also think there has to be education. For example, I studied for my master's in theology at the seminary here, and it was, I think, one of the few seminaries in the country where lay formation students, both men and women, studied alongside the priestly formation students. And I felt that that was the best way for the priestly formation students to learn how to articulate and listen to strong, well-educated lay men and women. But now that doesn't happen anymore because we've been excluded from the seminary formation. So where are these leaders going to get that ability if they don't learn how to listen?
Right.
Okay.
Thank you, June. Appreciate your call. An email from Anna in Madison. Would your guest agree that cable news punditry turns people off because the profession requires a kind of entitlement and confidence more typical of men?
No, I wouldn't agree. I really, you know, I think one of the most amazing examples, and there are a couple out there, but is Rachel Maddow. Mm-hmm. She is a guest frequently on CNN and MSNBC, and you know, is someone that absolutely, I mean, Donna Brazile, I mean, there mm-hmm. are a number of examples, but I think that, and I think your last caller is actually a perfect example. She said, you know, the topics I call in on are topics like this. I mean, we have a situation where we, you know, have a woman who's a host, a woman who's a guest, and you get women callers. Women are the number one consumers in this country. They make 80% of all the purchasing decisions. So if we're looking at this from an economic standpoint, it makes sense if you want to attract women, if you want women to engage, if you want women to, you know, if we're looking at this from a purely economic standpoint, buy your products, it really makes sense to have women presenting this information as well. And I think that, you know, to get back to the emailed question, women are absolutely just as capable as men of going on these television cable news shows and holding their own and really getting their information out there. I see it again and again, although too infrequently. We really need to up the amount that we see that, because I fully believe women are absolutely capable of doing it. They just need to be given the encouragement, the training, and the opportunity. And that's what we do at the Women's Media Center. And I want to, you know, encourage all the listeners out there who are come in contact with girls and women, whether it's your daughters, your sisters, to really encourage them to share their voices, to call into the media, to interact. You know, this is not a one-sided communications channel. This is really something where the media needs to hear from you, whether it's letters to the editor or an actual op-ed or trying to be a guest on a show or calling in. And I would encourage people to go to our website to get more information. It's womensmediacenter.com.
Thanks again to June. Now we go to Joan in Madison. Hi, Joan.
Hi, Joan. Thank you for this hi, Joy. Thank you for this wonderful program today.
I'm happy
I have
call.
A couple of comments. Mm-hmm. One of the comments is just how Wisconsin Public Radio can help. I cannot tell you the number of times in 1 month that I or my colleagues will call in, be put on hold, and have to wait behind 2, 3, 4, 10 men before our comments are taken. And by that time, we're frustrated and we don't hang on. I don't. And I think that it would be very helpful if indeed public radio set the tone by saying, you know what, when we have women call in, we are going to make sure that every other person that's on is a man or a woman, mm-hmm. instead of putting the whole string of men on. That's one. And the second thing is that often, and the other caller addressed this somewhat, is the agenda is set by men. And so issues that are extremely important. Right now, I'd look at all the domestic issues that are so important. And I'm in the military, and I think the military issues and the issues worldwide are very important. But there are so many domestic issues that are not addressed. And when they are, they're treated so frivolously. And oftentimes, those are the ones that women need to talk about because they know, they feel it every day. And yet, those aren't the topics of many of the talk shows.
Well, those are great suggestions, Joan. Appreciate it. Must be Rob Ferret, my male producer, who's not putting you on soon enough. I'm just teasing.
Yeah. That's okay. Blame him.
No, seriously, though, we do try to make an effort of mixing up the voices and opinions on all of our talk shows, but I think you make a good point. Certainly, you don't want to hear male, especially if there's an articulate caller like you waiting, Joan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say, too, that would be a real good in-house research project to just track how many times men are put on ahead of women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that makes a difference, doesn't it, Glenda? If you're listening along, if you hear all men, you might think, well, this is just men who are calling into this show.
It really does. And I think it becomes a cycle where mm-hmm. women don't see themselves, they don't hear themselves, they don't think it's an option. You know, it just kind of goes out of their mind. And then we perpetuate the cycle. And what Katie was talking about, well, then women aren't submitting and they aren't calling and they aren't, you know, we need to do, everyone has a role to play in this. And we need to do everything we can to make sure that women are encouraged to call in, encouraged to submit op-eds or go on television, and then that the door is open, that those women are actually making it to air. They're actually making it into the pages or online. And the other issue that the caller raised that I think is interesting is the one about the different topics. And I do think there's a way that women, you know, we have one of the participants in our program, Progressive Women's Voices, is Pundit Mom. She's a blogger, and she combines politics and issues of motherhood in such an amazing way. And she's exactly the kind of person that, you know, she can talk about the economy. She's a trained lawyer, and she certainly knows politics, but she can also tell you how this affects the American family, how it affects kids, how it affects childcare and health care and all of these issues. And that's exactly the kind of voice that we need, kind of talking about a variety of issues. And we should never assume that some issues are kind of the hard news male issues, and then there are those sort of soft issues that the women can talk about. Women can talk about anything.
She sounds like she'd be a great guest on this program.
Yes, she would.
We'll try her. And you are a great guest too, Glenda Testone, Vice President of the Women's Media Center, talking with us about the efforts from her group to try to increase the number of women that we see, hear, and read in the media. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question or a viewpoint on this. In Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 9 o'clock, stay tuned for Veronica Rickert and her guest between 9 and 11 this morning. We're talking about women in the media and why there aren't more women on the op-ed pages of our newspapers or in the ranks of broadcast media pundits. Our guest says this does matter, and her group is working on trying to change that. We're wondering what questions you have, and we're looking for women, too. We're wondering why more women don't call in to call-in radio programs. We always have our many, many men calling in. In fact, we have two men waiting, and we will get to those male callers in just a moment. But are you a woman? Have you ever called into this radio program? Why or why not? Why do you or don't you call into radio programs? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Do you think it matters that women are underrepresented in the media? Our next caller is Ed in West Allis. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Until you change the economic stranglehold that the American political right has on the media, you are not going to get any type of diverse opinion from women. There are a ton of women on the talk shows in this country. We just had two new ones appear on the Monsignor John McLaughlin show on PBS. Unfortunately, they represent the hardcore political corporate right. And the reality is that even on this program, on Labor Day, 32 days from now, instead of having Sarah Rogers, the vice president of the state AFL-CIO, on the program, we're going to be treated again to David Newby.
Yeah. You know what? I know you don't, you're not David Newby's biggest fan, Ed, and maybe we'll have Sarah Rogers on. We can always mix it up a little bit. We can have her on another time other than Labor Day to talk about labor issues. He just so happens to be the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. What do you make of that, Glenda? What he had to say about women are in the media, but they represent the hard right corporations more so than anything else.
Well, some of that is true. That's exactly why we have the Progressive Women's Voices program at the Women's Media Center. We really are making sure that, you know, the women that are represented, would be women that have a progressive perspective, that believe in diversity, that have that voice to contribute to the conversation. And, you know, radio is a great example. It's very overwhelmingly conservative, and you don't see a lot of women on the show. And it's something that we need to change. I think it has to do with, with the media struggling, the consolidation of media, the layoffs. It's just really squeezing. I think your caller's right. Ed is right. It's squeezing the diversity out of the media. And so when you do see women, they may be conservative women. That's why I think we need to expand that. We need to kind of loosen the squeeze and make sure that there is a diversity of perspectives and a diversity of voices. And to Ed's point about guests, you know, the study that I mentioned previously from Media Matters, mm-hmm. two out of every three guests on the Sunday morning shows, and if you look at Meet the Press, it's actually three out of every four guests are men. So I know it does seem like there are a lot of women as mm-hmm. guests on these shows, but it's not actually the case. It's still overwhelmingly men in most cases.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ed, for calling. Patty in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Joy. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Hey, I do have a chance to call in sometimes, which I'm grateful for. And one of the reasons I stay at home, and, you know, it's I'm working when you guys are on, and, you know, I'm listening. But at any moment, I could be interrupted, you know, by small children.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, that makes a difference.
You know, yeah. And today it's different because we stayed up late. But, you know, and I think you guys do a really good job. And, you know, I do hear female voices, and I think, you know, I don't think it has to do with the liberal left or the conservative right. I mean, maybe women are more moderate, and so they feel comfortable being non-confrontational. I don't know, but I certainly feel comfortable calling Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, I'm glad you do, and I thank you for letting us know. And I suppose if you're watching kids, that does make a difference. The guys are calling in because they don't have to worry about that, Glenda.
Yeah, I think we all know in this country that we have an imbalance when it comes to caretaking, that women are the vast majority of the caretakers in this country, whether it's young children or older parents. And that is certainly an inequity that we need to address on a broader scale. There was a study recently about women and men running for political office, and they found that 60% of the men they surveyed said that their partner, their wife or girlfriend was the caretaker of the children, and 60% of the women said, yes, I'm the caretaker. So it's really a scenario where we've got a deep imbalance when it comes to caretaking. And I think that can be a challenge. But, you know, one of the things I want to introduce and put out there that I think has really helped in some ways is new media, is online media. This is something I mentioned Pundit Mom earlier. And this is one of the reasons that she, you know, her main media focus is her blog. And blogging is something, going online and kind of getting your information out that way. I know you just, Joy, you had an email recently that came in as a comment. And those are great ways to really be able to participate in the media on your own time. Everything's so portable now, and it's really, you know, even if you get interrupted, you can come back to it. We actually have a blog on our site called Majority Post, women being the majority in this country. This is really a place where women's voices can be heard and are celebrated, and we really want to hear from everybody at womensmediacenter.com. And go to Majority Post and tell us what you think. Tell us how you think we can get more women in the media and what we can do together to really help solve these issues.
In fact, we have more women callers this hour than we usually do. I would guess it's almost 4-1 in terms of male versus female callers.
Wow!
But we're trying to do what we can to increase the number, and part of that is by trying to get more female guests on the air too. That's another
exactly.
way to do that.
It's a cycle. It's yeah. it's sort of the you know it can be a positive reinforcing situation, or it can be an unequal reinforcing situation, where if you constantly have men on, you're probably, you know, going to get more male callers. If you have women on, you may get more women callers. So this is a great little study we're doing here.
It does depend on the topic. Jerry Ann in South Milwaukee did send this email. Females are conditioned beginning at an early age that their opinions are not important, and males speak with more authority, and that even their voice sound more authoritative. What does your guest think women can do about that?
Well, I want to encourage every listener out there, as I said, who comes in contact with women or girls, to really encourage them to raise their voices in the media and in their lives. That, you know, I really think women's contributions, in whatever tone or inflection they deliver them, are valuable. They are important. We need everyone's expertise and talent to be able to solve the huge challenges that we have ahead of us as a country. You know, we have huge challenges with the economy, with healthcare. We're choosing a new leader. We really need to be hearing from and be informed by women and men. And I think it's just so important to encourage those close to you to believe in their opinions, that women and girls to believe in their opinions, to raise their voices and to not be afraid, to not feel like because they have something different to say that it's less valuable. It's incredibly valuable.
Paul in New Berlin. We'll let you on, Paul. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. I truly appreciate the message that's being offered here, especially just this past conversation about all voices being heard and people speaking up when they have a message that's part of the solution that we have to find together for what's going on in our country. We're very, very tried by a lot, so many issues. And I just wanted to appreciate in my life the women who are very articulate, well-informed, help me understand issues from other perspectives. And I think this is what's important in the media, is that we have voices that don't command necessarily presence because they're louder or better informed, but that they resonate with the audiences, because this is why I think women will find a very prominent place in our future, or already have. Because they have an empathy, they've been listening, they've had to understand deep in their souls some of the issues, and then they come in from that position of knowingness within themselves. What sort of message can help nurture and bring us to a better place in the society? So I just appreciate so much the feminine presence and the nurturing nature of women in my life, and look forward to hearing much more of it in the media.
Well, thank you, Paul. Paul sounds like a very smart man, Glenn.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Paul. I think, you know, it's funny, I was on a radio program previously, and the reason I was asked to be on it was the host, daughter actually saw our Sexism Sells But We're Not Buying It video and made her dad watch it, you know, and said, Dad, you have to take a look at this. The media is really doing some things that are incredibly sexist. I want you to take a look. And he looked at it, and he was amazed at what was out there and really the imbalance in representation. And he was so moved, he had to have me on the program to talk about this. So this is really a collaboration. We really need to be working on these issues together, and it's always encouraging to hear men who are very open to that and really want to hear from women and want to support those voices. And And I think, you know, this is the way of the future. This is what we need to do to work together to solve those problems and really build the kind of country that we all can be very proud of.
Marilyn in Cleveland is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Morning.
I call in periodically when it's on a subject that I feel I'm knowledgeable on or that I have questions about. And I do find that many of the men I know are knowledgeable about the Green Bay Packers or the baseball scores, but they don't know anything about the recent FISA bill or the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. So I figure that I'm not letting them intimidate me.
Good for you, Marilyn. Yeah. You know, one of the fears I've heard from people who don't call in at all, men or women, I think I hear it a little bit more from women, is there everybody has a fear of public speaking to a certain extent because they don't want to look foolish. Maybe women are just smarter about that. I mean, do you think that has anything to do with it, Glenda?
Well, I think everybody, you know, I think what we can kind of control is the system, the media system that's out there, making sure that the opportunities out there are equal and that women and men are being sought after mm-hmm. equally. What we kind of address at the Women's Media Center is the training and the encouragement that the amount of support and the amount of training and the amount of dedicated attention that women get, that we're trying to really make that equal to get women to get out there and do this. And then I think the other thing is that, you know, women and the people that love them just need to also encourage and really support that, you know, people are smart and women are smart. They have things to say. Those voices should be heard in the media and in their lives, and we just need to encourage that.
Yeah. Marilyn, thank you very much. We appreciate your smart commentary on this program. Connie in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I want to observe that there's a parallel in the world of work. I'm a counselor and financial consultant, and I see people for sort of financial coaching. And I've noticed over many years that women will be shy to make an application for a job that's a substantial step up mm-hmm. because they feel that they ought to know how to do that job before they apply for it, mm-hmm. whereas mm-hmm. frequently men will feel completely entitled to try for whatever they can get hired for and learn on the job. And so there, as a result, the effect is that there's a significant number of vastly underemployed, really smart women, capable women, and a significant number of maybe overemployed men. And it has to do with the confidence right at that beginning point. So it seems to me that that's a little bit parallel to what we're discussing.
Yeah, it sounds like it is, Glenda.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we see this in a number of areas. You know, and I think it really comes to if we all can believe that we are empowered, we have the ability to encourage women to push past that. Because I think we have found that, you know, that, and Katie would talk about this if she was on, still on as well, but that, you know, when Katie trains women and asks them to say what they are an expert in, that they have some trouble with it. There are caveats. Well, I know a lot about this, but I wouldn't say I'm an expert. And studies have shown that men are much more ready to say, yeah, I'm an expert in this. I can come on and talk about this. And I think we just need to push past that. We just need to encourage women to believe what we know is true, which is they have valuable opinions to share. The media, the entire country would benefit from hearing those opinions. And we just need to remove the barriers yeah. from actually getting those ideas out there. And we need to work as individuals and as caring, you know, community members in this country to encourage women to push past that and get out there and do it, because we know that in many cases they can.
And in our final 30 seconds, you see this improving?
I do. We're having amazing success with the Progressive Women's Voices program. As I said, we've gotten women in the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, on radio, on blogs, the Huffington Post. we just really are seeing this improve, but we need all the help and support that we can. We really encourage people to go to the website and really contribute to this work and make sure that we can continue making women visible and powerful in the media. It's womensmediacenter.com.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Glenda Testone, Vice President of the Women's Media Center. Thanks to Rob Ferret and Cynthia Schuster for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.